Ich weiß nicht, ob das das andere Mikro gebrauchen muss. Ich versuch's noch ohne.
I need to have that. Do you understand me?
Yes,
great. Ah, here we are. So now my part is to explain how to introduce sovereign money reform as foreseen by the Swiss initiative. Implementation of sovereign money in terms of banking technique, very simply. And so what sovereign money reform, what is it about? Simply speaking, it is about substituting sovereign money for bank money, substituting central bank money for bank money, or say substituting sovereign currency on account for bank money. These various terms in a country like Switzerland are interchangeable, are largely interchangeable. And doing such thing is nothing unheard of. And the most important predecessor were the paper money reforms of the 19th century. At the time, for reasons very similar to the ones that exist today again, the hitherto private banknotes were phased out, and the central banknotes were phased in, and thus establishing a note monopoly with the central banks as it still exists to the present day. And the sovereign money reform today would do something analogous, something very similar, by phasing out private bank money and replacing that with sovereign money on account, sovereign currency on account. In the future, it might also be about sovereign cryptocurrency, but for the time being, it's too early to tell. So let's talk about money on account. And So what you see here is a stylized balance sheet, the assets the left side, the liabilities the right side, and essentially in terms of accountancy, what would happen is that one position on the liability side, overnight liabilities to customer, the frame position, that would be removed from the balance sheet, that would be taken off the balance sheet, and exist further on as a separate structure of accounts and payments, say sovereign currency accounts with sovereign money in them. And there are various ways how that could be done technically. Some people are calling for a central bank account for everyone. I think it's not likely to happen. There are different ways, one, two, three more ways of doing it. And one might be simply to have these sovereign currency accounts adjoining a bank's other payment service provider's central bank account off their balance sheet, but adjoining to that account, so that they are able to be payment service providers making payments in sovereign money. So, for customer transactions, so say customer transaction only with accounts. And in this case, even the current account numbers might be retained, because such account numbers are a combination of a bank's sort code and an individual account number, and so actually we could keep that. So the position, the former overnight liabilities to customers, then would at the same time be converted into a liability to the central bank, as if the central bank had created that money from the beginning. Because otherwise, you see, once the transition is made, once the reform has taken place, money flowing back to the banks would no longer be bank money that is deleted upon the reflux, but that would be sovereign money that would not stop to exist. So banks would have a huge windfall profit, and that's the reason why they will have to pass on that money back to the central bank, and the central bank then can immediately bring in circulation newly created sovereign money. So a major result of this little small but important change in the books is that customer money is segregated from a bank's money. Today you cannot make a distinction between in a bank what is the customer's money and what is the bank's own money. That can simply not be done because bank money is not positively existing money. So after that change, customer money and bank money would safely be separate. And as a result of this, in a transfer, when making payments, the money would be transferred directly from one customer account into the recipient customer account, directly without intermediation, without payment intermediation or, say, monetary intermediation by the banking sector. This is the situation we have today. We have a split circuit, the two-tier structure is a split circuit structure with public circulation on the basis of bank money and the interbank circulation on the basis of reserves. And payments in the public circuit can only be done by intermediation. They are intermediated by the reserve circulation. And that would no longer exist. And you see this split circuit system, that's the foundation of fractional reserve banking. And so if this is removed, we have no more fractional reserve banking. And the situation then would be like this, which means we would have one integrated, a single circuit in a pure sovereign money system, where all participants in the economy would use the same kind of money in basically in the same way. And that money as legal tender would come from the central bank. The major part of it in the form of genuine seigniorage to the public purse or for a citizen's dividend or whatsoever, but also in the course of monetary policy measures and activities of the central bank, they would come into circulation by quite traditional central bank loans to the bank, short-term loans certainly. Now, this raises a number of questions, and the first question often is, people start to fear for their money. But don't fear for your money, there's no need, because all assets and liabilities, the amount of them, will remain untouched and will remain absolutely the same as it was before. But more precisely asking, what about the banks? Will banks be losing money? And here again, no, definitely no. To the degree banks possess money, that money will not be touched. And the money banks possess are cash in vault still, and are then central bank reserves for a minimum and excess reserves. And with bank money, however, it's different. And why? Because bank money is a promise to pay. Bank money is not positively existing money. It's a promise to pay. We have become used to use it as if it were money proper. And it's only covered in central bank money to about, depending on the country, 1 to 3 or 8%. And so it's a liability of the bank, it's a claim of the customers on the bank. And so that's money people think the banks have, but the banks have not. And so as the banks don't have that money, you can't take away it from them. What would happen is just the contrary. The money would not be taken away, but money would be put in. Sovereign currency on account, which previously did not exist, would be put in. And that's what would happen. Wouldn't banks still be able to create another sort of money surrogate? Would they be able to create money on giro account? Basically, no, because there are no more giro accounts. And rebuilding some such structure that is not done overnight, that will take quite some time, and it would not be our problem of today. And another question is, how would banks fund their lending and investment business? Well, basically much in the same way as today, they would take up money on the open market from other banks and so on. But there would be one big difference. Many people today think that banks borrow money from their customers, so in the sense of being financial intermediaries. But in the present system, banks cannot make use of customer deposits. The thing is not that banks are using our money. The reality is we are using bank money, you see. The banks need cash and reserves. The banks cannot make use of banks' deposit money. It does not represent loanable funds. They cannot be loaned. So that's the important thing. In the sovereign money system, however, in fact, customers lending money to their banks borrowing from their customers, that would again exist, as was the case in former cash economies. The end of fractional reserve banking, would that mean that banks incur higher costs? In my opinion, not necessarily, and the reason is that banks already pay deposit interest today. And they would simply continue to pay deposit interest, but there would be a big difference. Today, banks have to pay deposit interest for reasons of customer loyalty, for preventing deposits to drain off, which would be a huge liquidity risk for the bank. And in order to preempt that liquidity risks, banks have continued to pay deposit interest. But they are actually not they are not interested in it because they cannot make use of their own bank money. The customers have the deposit money. In a sovereign money system, banks actually need the sovereign money also to take it out from their customers, and that will not pose a problem. No, I will skip that. It will take too much money. Too much time. Another Freudian slip. And let me say instead a few additional words on what sovereign money reform does, and maybe more importantly, what it does not. So, wait a moment. I have to. Yes, that's basically so. The idea of sovereign money and sovereign money reform that follows an old principle in monetary policy, and that is the currency school principle of separating money from credit, which means the separation of money creation. It's about money creation by the national bank, by the national central bank, separate from the bank's business of extending credit, of the lending business and the investment business of banks. These two things would be kept apart, while another, in the meantime, largely well-established principle, the principle of having separate responsibilities for monetary and fiscal functions, that will be maintained. So there will be no mixing up of monetary and monetary and fiscal functions. Not at all, to the contrary, these will thoroughly be kept apart. And and against that background, sovereign money is about renationalization of money, yes. But it is not about nationalization of banking and finance, in no way. And by the way, what Richard Werner was saying before lunch, that central banks would be in control of, central banks would decide over the uses of money, over the allocation of newly created money. That's definitely not the plan. The central bank will create the money and issue the money in the set way, but the banking business will be left to the bank. But another, say, little bit important difference would be banks could no longer create themselves the money on which they operate. That would be the important difference. So, in addition, sovereign money is neither an additional regulation and is certainly not meant to be a silver bullet for any financial ill. Instead, sovereign money, so seen from a constitutional point of view, it makes sure that money is no private affair. It stops the privatization of money. And because money is a public matter of constitutional importance, this, by the way, is a quote by Erwin Fischer. On the functional aspects, sovereign money is one or perhaps even the most important prerequisite for warranting safe money, achieving more stability of banking and finance, as well as a better balanced money supply for the entire economy. I've already said that. In addition, sovereign money is not about credit guidance in no way. That's not part of the plan. And sovereign money does not include international payment, control of international payments and capital flows. You see, all these aspects are not inherently part of a monetary system. If central banks or governments feel compelled to fall back to such measures, to take such measures, that's not inherent in a monetary system. It's a political question, and it's not inherent in a sovereign money system either. So, as sovereign money is a safe asset, it cannot disappear in the crisis, the existence of the money is not threatened in a banking crisis, and that's why banks no longer need to be saved for that reason. And equally, deposit insurance and state guarantee of private money would no longer be needed. And as the central banks would be in full control of the stock of money, they would be able to pursue effective monetary policy, being able to flexibly readjust the stock of money at any time, at any amount, providing there is always enough money and making sure there is no overshooting money supply as well. Now I have to come to an end. A last aspect, and that is has already been touched upon, that is seigniorage. Sovereign money would make for undiminished seigniorage to the benefit of the public purse or for a citizen's dividend or for whatsoever. And the regular annual seigniorage in Switzerland, to get an idea of the magnitudes we are talking about, that would be about for each percentage point growth that would amount, the seigniorage would amount to 6 to 12 to 18 billion Swiss francs, which is quite a nice amount of money. And what is more, there will be a one-off conversion seigniorage of a considerable order, and that, where does that come from? Again, it's not taken away from somebody, it's not taken away from the banks, because that money actually today doesn't exist. Bank money is not positively existing money, it's a promise to pay. And that promise to pay will be replaced with a positively existing stock of sovereign money and of the order of the existing bank money in Switzerland at current terms, that's about 550 billion Swiss francs. And as I want to say, that's not the purpose of monetary reform. It's a welcome side effect. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.